From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Midnight Movie Cowboys. I'm your host, Hunter Deusing, in Dallas, Texas. And joining me in the Rocky Mountain High, Colorado, the mountain is there. And he must climb the mountain because it is there. John Graves. Say hello, John.
Hello.
And making love to the mountain, a man from Los Angeles emerged from his tent to make love to the mountain because it is there. We have Eric Zaldivar joining us once again. Say hello, Eric.
What up, nerds?
Yeah, this is a nerd episode, all right. This week, we are doing William Shatner's masterpiece, Star Trek V. Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, baby.
Boy, are we going to get the angriest emails from this episode.
Oh, this episode. You guys, get ready. Get ready. Strap in. You're in for a wild ride.
Strap those seatbelts.
You know, do you know why they are installing seatbelts in movie theaters? It is because Captain Kirk himself is directing a Star Trek movie. Can you believe it, nerds? Not Spock. Captain Kirk is directing.
Yeah, adjust your glasses. Come on, Poindexters.
That's a great poster, all kidding aside.
I posted that picture of Kirk holding up his hand, his pointer finger. What does God need with a starship? My friend comments, what does God need with seatbelts? Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, William Shatner's directorial debut in the Star Trek movie universe. You know, they let Spock do two movies, so they had to let Bill do a film. DeForest Kelly, sorry, you don't get to do a Star Trek movie. Sorry, D. Bill Shatner did this film, and the original conception he had for it was a little bit different than the movie we got. And if you've read Star Trek movie memories, Shatner gives a pretty interesting account of the film from conception to it opening in theaters. I tried listening to his commentary on the Blu-ray and couldn't do it. It was too boring.
Really?
Yeah, I tried listening to it for this, and I put it on this morning while I was doing stuff. But, you know, a lot of times when you get commentaries with the actors or directors involved, you get a lot of this, boy, this was a nice shot. Isn't that shot pretty? It's really nice. Remember that day on set? Yeah, it was kind of a quick day, you know, didn't think the weather was going to cooperate. Oh, this shot's great. Oh, and look at this shot. Isn't this fantastic? We did this on the set, and it's out in the wilderness.
Look at the light.
The light is so good. The cinematographer just did a fantastic job, don't you think? Yeah, yeah, did a great job. And hey, do you remember when we had the stuntman rock climbing workshop? What was that? Yeah, it was fantastic. And oh, this shot. I was thinking of Lawrence of Arabia when I did this shot. Fantastic. I loved conceiving this shot. And
so
I'm not gonna learn anything from this.
So better to probably listen to the audiobook Star Trek Memories than
I listened to most of it on a cross country trip with Malloy in 2010, and it was very interesting.
No, the Star Trek Memories is good. The book is good. The audiobook, but I'm talking about the commentary on the Blu-ray.
The commentary is terrible.
The commentary sounds terrible.
Listen to that.
But if you want the, and I think there's a book, because the commentary was Shatner with his daughter, who apparently I think helped him write a book about making Star Trek V, which I don't have. I've never read it. The Star Trek Movie Memories book is quite good. It's one of those books you'll rip right through. Yeah, that one he goes through everything with this film. So the plot of Star Trek V is basically a guy, Vulcan L. Ron Hubbard, played by Lawrence Luckinbill, is on the planet of Galactic Peace, and he's gathering up an army of followers, and he wants to go to this planet called Shuckery, where, because apparently Sean Connery, they wanted him for the role of this character. He wants to go to this planet where God is, and he needs a starship to do it, and so the starship Enterprise gets called down there. But it turns out this Vulcan L. Ron Hubbard guy is actually Spock's brother, Cybok. This creates kind of a division, and what he does is he uses the Vulcan mind meld to help people, like, bring out their pain to... It's very Scientology. It sounded a lot like Scientology to me, where you take your trauma and the stuff that kind of screws you up, and he brings it out, and then he, like, kind of heals you. It's like healing your thetan and going clear, right?
But Hunter, he says he based it on televangelists in the 80s.
He did. In the book, he said he based it on Tammy Faye Baker and Jim Baker and Jimmy Swaggart. But it feels like Scientology to me in the movie. It really feels like that Hollywood religion, that Hollywood sci-fi religion.
It's the type of thing that a Hollywood writer would emphasize doing this type of thing anyway.
Yeah.
Which is basically Scientology, because that's their kind of... I think I don't know what the feeling is in Hollywood about Scientology, but I feel like there's like kind of a pro versus con sort of or anything.
I think Scientology was one of those things that they kind of respectfully coexisted with because...
Yeah.
But I think that's kind of changed lately.
Mm-hmm. There's like four different streaming shows debunking Scientology.
Yeah,
and the
ex-members, like, well, a
lot
attacking
of, it. Leah Remini doing that
Leah
one.
Leah Remini, Paul Haggis famously left and turned on them. He was a very early member of Scientology, and he is a very vocal opponent of Scientology. He was one of the main people interviewed for that Going Clear book that the documentary was based on. But I think a lot of prominent people have turned on them, and David Miscavige has gotten so much bad press, and I think Tom Cruise, too, with all the way the whole thing is structured kind of around him. I think that organization is kind of on the outs right now.
Don't you feel that the turning point, at least in the public non-Scientologist eyes, was when Tom jumped on Oprah's couch?
The press tour around War of the Worlds and Mission Impossible 3,
yeah,
those films were really overshadowed by Tom using the press as a means to promote Scientology, because he was promoting that more than he was promoting the films. That had to be something that the producers of those movies remembered and did not like. I can't imagine Spielberg was too pleased when...
No, I mean, well, they had done Minority Report together and then War of the Worlds, and they were going to continue on, but that's what killed it. He was not happy.
Yeah, I would imagine Spielberg would have been... If I was Steven Spielberg, I would have been pissed. And, you know, the Mission Impossible things are his baby, so, you know, J.J. Abrams got the boost he needed from that film. I don't think he cares.
He claimed to care about Star Wars, but that's not evident from his Star Wars movies.
No,
either.
Well, J.J. Abrams successfully managed to produce and direct several Star Trek movies that are worse than the one we're talking about today by several miles.
Well, this is better. This is better than any of the Generation movies.
Oh, I agree. Star Trek V, okay, Final Frontier. Everyone used to talk about this as though it was the worst Star Trek movie. It's not.
not
by a mile.
Not even close.
In fact, if it was an episode of the TV show, everybody would probably think it was a pretty good episode of the show.
I'm not saying it's better than most of the first six movies, but I'm not saying that at all. But I would probably watch it more times than I'm going to watch three. I'd say that.
I was about to say I would watch this again over Search for Spock again.
Yeah.
Search for Spock is kind of it's not terrible, but
it's the most enjoyable thing in the world.
No, it's kind of a weird coda to a much better film, Wrath of Khan. Star Trek IV is like a amazing episode of the show, and Star Trek VI is my favorite of the films.
It's really good. Yeah.
And you know, the first one's kind of weird. I like
that.
It.
That might be the best one, but that's also one that you're not going to watch on repeat.
No, and it's one that I like, but when people say they don't like it, I understand.
I get it. Yeah. Yeah, it's boring. I get it. I get it.
They look like dentists. You know, it has that weird slow-mo sequence. That's the part that grinds the movie to a halt for me.
This one, Final Frontier, as you said, it gets a lot of flack and it doesn't deserve it. I think there's a lot of pros to the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to talk about those? I have my Bugman list here.
Well, give me your Bugman list. I'll let you go first.
I got a few Bugman points to make. First of all, this is the only one in the series in which the kind of the Mighty Three, McCoy, Spock, and Kirk, get the most time together.
And, Eric, by the way, I request that when you do this, that you do it with your mouth hanging open like you're holding a Nintendo Switch. Can you do that for me? Just to make it more Bugman.
Jeez.
I'll send you my Switch if it helps.
Yeah. I don't own one. I don't own one, so I'm not cool Bugman, you know.
I want you to hold your copy of Star Trek V and, like, just hold your mouth open.
I haven't been to Big Lots. I haven't been to Big Lots this week. I can't. You know what? I got at Big Lots. My mouth is agape, by the way. I got a John. Look at this. John Wayne's Suspense Collection, okay? Which comes with Man in the Vault, Plunder of the Sun, Track of the Cat, and Ring of Fear. Ooh. And what's interesting about that is John Wayne is not in any of these movies. They're trying to confuse the oldsters that buy this because all of these films are his production company, Bat Jack, but he's not in any of them.
Interesting. It's like it's like they have John Payne.
Yeah.
One time I bought this Kino Lorber movie. And I saw Gail Russell and John Payne, but I misread it as John Wayne. I was like, Gail Russell and John Wayne, sign me up. But it was John Payne. Dang it.
Weren't you confused by the fact that Wayne wasn't on the cover, though?
Believe me. I was like, why is Gail Russell featured so prominently? Hey, listen. Listen.
I wonder why.
Gail Russell is reason enough. Okay.
Yeah, no, of course.
Gail Russell. I have a huge crush on Gail Russell. So
this may not be a surprise to any of the listeners, but there is a movie in this. And this is the reason why I got the box set, because I've actually seen one of these films before, and I didn't like it very much. But I got it mostly for Ring of Fear, which has Mickey Spillane playing himself solving a circus mystery.
Does he commit any misogynistic crimes in it?
I'm going to find out tonight.
Okay.
I can tell you, does not break an opera records, you know, some commie geeks opera records.
Yeah, well, no, he's not playing his creation this time.
Interesting, because didn't
Mickey Spillane solving a mystery?
Didn't he play Mike Hammer at some point?
He did in the
Girl Hunters.
Hunters. Yeah, which has it's not very good, but it does have an ending that rivals the ending of The Mechanic, of how cool it is. Mm,
okay. With Star Trek V, you had your Bugman list. I'm sorry, I derailed.
That's okay. Well, I made my first point, and I wanted to discuss that this is the only one of the first six movies, and therefore afterwards it doesn't matter because it's all generation territory and J.J. Abrams nut crap, whatever it is. It's McCoy, Bones, Kirk, and Spock spend the most time together in this movie.
A lot of people who dog on this movie make fun of the Yosemite National Park stuff.
Yeah.
I like that stuff.
I do too.
I like Kirk, Spock, and McCoy hanging out, going camping. And these characters are really, McCoy is the passionate one. You have Spock as the logical one. And then Kirk is sort of the mediator between the two. Even though it's those character types are so shallow, you see how they bring all these great things out of them. Like, I love Spock going, before I took the liberty of looking up camping traditions, so I'm going to roast this marshmallow. I liked him better when he was dead, before he died. And, like, singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and McCoy claiming that lyrics don't matter.
The funny thing about that is a ongoing running gag, I guess, among people who watch Star Trek is they always resort to public domain stuff, like for songs or books they read, so they don't have to pay anybody, you know, royalties and all that. Like the Abrams movies always have Kirk listening to Beastie Boys, which I think is like stupid. Because it's like, no, he's supposed to be listening to like classical music or opera, whatever's in the public domain. It's like that's Kirk.
Well, that's that's J.J. Abrams turning him into J.J. Abrams, you know.
Right.
His taste shifted in the reboot time thing, whatever warp.
Right.
The thing that too that I love, that's so William Shatner, is having Kirk climbing, doing free climbing.
Yeah.
On the to the side of the mountain. Why does he climb the mountain? Because it is there.
Because, you know, T.J. Hooker, I think, had just finally been canceled. I think they did a season for the CBS late movie, and it was done. And so he had to do something kind of – he had a reputation to uphold of being, you know, the Chad of the 80s TV middle-aged guy.
When I was watching it, I was going, I think of these guys as being boomers, but they're not. They're like my grandmother's generation, really.
Yeah.
The silent generation.
Yeah, some of those guys were in World War II.
Yeah,
James Cohen was, and
I think DeForest Kelly was one of the older ones, and he was, I think, Greatest Generation.
Yeah, he looked like he was 50 years old in a Audie Murphy movie he did in like 61.
Yeah.
So it's just
he always looked old. Shatner, he is my grandmother's age. Like he's like 90, 91, something like that.
Yeah.
He's 89. I think he turns 90 this year.
Oh, okay. So he's just a little bit younger than my grandmother, just slightly.
Got away with killing my wife, just like Robert Blake.
Yeah, just like Robert Blake.
My beautiful wife is dead.
Yeah, she's dead.
I'm going to do a song with Brad Paisley about it.
I'd like to text the press about this.
I tried to troll him into answering some questions about White Comanche, his Spanish Western from the 60s. Didn't quite work out.
Mm. I'm sorry, I'm not taking the bait, Eric.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Best, comma, Bill.
they were Spanish, not Italian. They didn't try to fuck my wife.
Yeah. I still, my other Bugman point is we got normal Spock in this one. Because if you remember in the first one, he just came out of that ritual that Vulcans do in order to sap themselves of any kind of emotion. So he's kind of not the Spock of the show in the first movie.
Yes.
He is the Spock of the show in the second one, but he dies at the end, and then he doesn't show up until the end of the third one, and then in the fourth movie he's relearning to be Spock again.
Yes.
So here we have the very rare normal Spock in the movie series.
That's a very good point. That Spock had not been, we hadn't had the Kirk Spock McCoy dynamic for a while,
right?
That we enjoyed from the show, and here we get a lot more of it because it's something we've been missing. From the movies. We also have the Starship Enterprise again.
We do. Yeah. For the first time in two films.
Yes.
Oh, no. I guess it's there for most of the third. Destroyed in the third.
Yeah,
I
guess destroyed in the third film, and we didn't get it. They were in a Bird of Prey in four. When it shows up on the commentary track, when the Bird of Prey shows up, fantastic design. Always love the design. It's fantastic. Just always love the design of that ship. It's terrific.
What was your introduction to Star Trek? Mine might be different from John's and yours.
Mine was, I can't remember which one I saw first, if it was the motion picture or Generations. But I got into Generations was advertised to death on TV, and I wanted to get into Star Trek because it looked like something I would like, because it was space and science fiction and blah blah blah. But I remember seeing the motion picture and not really I saw Generations, and, you know, I was familiar with Picard and not so familiar with Kirk, but I was like, oh, he's the OG guy. And then I can't remember if I saw that or the motion picture first. But I really got hooked when I rented, because I would rent them from Blockbuster, and Ratha Khan was the one that really hooked me. But I didn't see much of the TV show until later. But the original six movies, though, are what hooked me in.
Yeah, I didn't. My first introduction to the Star Trek was Generations, but I was too young to consume that, really. It was over my head. I was used to Star Wars, and I just wasn't sure why nobody was shooting laser beams at each other, and it kind of bored me. So I just ignored Star Trek for years and years and years. I got into the original series and then started watching the first six movies, and I can't digest anything about those characters that I can't get into. So I never bothered. So I only like the original series and the first six movies.
You couldn't digest Next Generation?
Yeah, I couldn't digest Picard and crew for some reason or other. I just can't get into them. So I only like the original series and one through six. But, you know, I understand that I think I think it's safe to say that the general populace, probably generations, is the series, right, of the whole Enterprise.
The next generation.
Well, that's the wrong wording to use. Yeah, I would say that seems to be the more popular of everything.
Yeah, I think the next generation, I think, is considered by the fandom to be the high point. Considered to be the best of the TV shows. Like, you know, in the first few seasons, people don't regard very highly. It's kind of by season three that it really starts to get good.
It kicks off.
But yeah, I think if you were to poll the fandom, they would probably say the Next Generation is the best show, the best version of Star Trek. For me, I grew up on the original six movies, and I think it probably started with Generations, but I just liked Shatner. I liked Spock. I liked McCoy. I liked their dynamic.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And I love the original show because I love the 60s aesthetic. It's colorful. It's like a Italian horror movie. It's great.
Yeah.
It's Planet of the Vampires.
Yeah, it really is. It's like it's like watching a Bava film every week, you know. But I also liked the look of the movies with the Admiral, the sort of the way Nick Meyer sort of made them look like Horatio Hornblower. I always liked the six movies, and even when I was a kid, I thought that they were better than Star Wars because I thought the six movies were just told a consistent story. You got more meat with the characters. It didn't peter out the way Star Wars did with Return of the Jedi. I was like, this is a real science fiction saga, and it has a great final film with six, which Star Wars did not with Return of the Jedi.
Well, you gave the reason there, because you gave the reason right there. It's science fiction. Star Wars is not science fiction.
Well,
it's space opera.
Actually, what's interesting is when I talk to my students, I'll ask them, what is science fiction? Give me examples of science fiction movies. And then what I'll do is explain why Star Wars is not science fiction, because it's a fantasy film. And I will talk about Star Trek is science fiction. 2001 A Space Odyssey is science fiction because we're dealing in the realm of the possible.
Right.
We're dealing in reality, which Star Wars does not deal in reality. Yeah, it's speculative. Yeah. Like, I'll show them some of 2001 and I'll go like, what's this doing? It's theorizing on the future. We were going to the moon. Mankind was looking to the stars and we were thinking, I'll go into space and I'll video call with my son on his birthday from a Howard Johnson and in orbit.
the furniture.
I show them a video of Arthur C. Clarke talking about what the world's going to look like in a few decades. And he'll talk about surgeons doing surgery in Tokyo from Paris. And he'll talk about these one computer talking to another. And I kind of go, what's he talking about? And he's talking about the internet. Yeah, we didn't know what it was, but that's what he's talking about.
It's funny you guys talk about Star Trek and you're both so young, because I actually watched Star Trek when I was like four. Before I even saw Star Wars, it was in the 70s, which is when Star Trek actually got its cult following and popularity, was being aired on syndicated TV every afternoon. I mean, I guess it'd be considered after school, but I remember it airing at like 6 p.m. on like the local UHF channel, like just every night, like for a year or two. And I first watched it.
I'm sure the original show played throughout the 90s somewhere, but it just wasn't channels I was consuming for whatever reason.
It was buried. From what I remember, I saw it in the 70s on local TV as a kid. I didn't understand it half the time. It was totally over my head. So I only watched episodes that had like monsters and, you know, a phaser gunfight or whatever at the beginning, because I didn't really understand the plots. Then when I was old enough to appreciate it, it wasn't on TV anymore, because Next Generation kind of took over all the syndication slots. And they seem to de-emphasize the original show quite a bit. And I noticed it would be on in weird times, like 2 a.m., like every night. Times nobody would watch it.
Well, and that's interesting because I think one reason why Star Trek V probably didn't do as well was because Next Generation had really taken off by that point.
Yeah.
The Next Generation was sating the appetites of Star Trek fans, whereas before, if they wanted Trek, they had to wait for a new movie to come out. Harvey Bennett.
Did you watch Next Generation, Hunter?
When it was on?
Yeah.
Occasionally. It was not something I watched with any loyalty. It was something I honestly didn't really watch a lot of TV shows when I was a kid dedicated, you know, where I went, okay, this is when it's on, blah, blah, blah. But if I caught it, I would watch it.
Right.
But I had a friend who was obsessed with Star Trek who would tape it. And so when I'd go over to his house, he would just get out his favorite episodes and show them to me. But he taped every single episode of every show.
That's funny because I did know people who were very devoted to it. I watched like first couple episodes when it premiered and I couldn't get into it at all. And they had Will Wheaton as like Superboy, Superchild or whatever.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's like genius whiz kid.
Really and annoying character.
And I couldn't deal with that then. And I couldn't get into the characters. They seemed, except for, I like Denise Crosby's character. And I think she was fired like a year later or something. That was just like, I thought it was such a dull show. It was nothing like the original. And I think what I liked about the original show was the 60s TV nature of it.
Yeah.
Kind of like how it is with Wild Wild West or Voyage to the Bottom of the Sea or, you know, 60s Dragnet or, you know, Green Hornet, Tarzan, whatever. The 60s TV shows have a certain type of pacing and they kind of guarantee a fight scene and the writing is really tight. And you didn't have that in Next Generation. It was almost like a preview of the kind of asexual political correctness that we saw in entertainment that kind of dominates today.
You know, there's a really great documentary Shatner did about the first season of Next Generation. Mm-hmm. He talks to everybody involved kind of about what a kind of a rough season of television it was to do because there were so many people fighting behind the scenes over what the show was going to be. But they said that Gene had all these weird rules about what the show needed to be. There couldn't be any, like, you know, we've resolved violence. It was so utopian that it became very difficult to create conflict in the show because of all these demands he placed on it. It made the show difficult to write for because it was like, you know, we can't have any conflict because mankind doesn't have conflict anymore because we're, you know, sort of this asexual space atheist thing. we're Reddit space atheists.
Commie space atheists.
Yeah, we're commie space atheists. You
Which
know.
Is funny because it's like his original Star Trek, you know, concepts and everything. Yeah, this guy was a World War II vet, cop, commercial airline pilot, probably banging a chick in every town or something, you know. And it's just like
one thing there's one thing that's not commie about it, though, is the Prime Directive, where they're not supposed to interfere with anything.
That's true.
If they go down a planet. They always break it, of course, for the sake of conflict in the show, but the idea of the Prime Directive is not commie in any way, shape, or form.
Well, because communism is about disrupting tradition. You know,
exactly.
Yeah, that's right. Actually very true.
So was Gene Roddenberry on the third rail of science fiction?
I guess so.
Settings?
You know, yeah, and with this film, Star Trek V, Shatner said that Gene Roddenberry hated the idea of the movie. And in Shatner's original idea for the film, Sybok was a guy named Zar, and he was not Spock's brother. He was a guy he went to Vulcan Seminary with, and Spock actually buys into the idea that he is the Messiah or the Chosen One. They go to Shakari, which is, I don't think it was called Shakari at this time because that was supposed to be a tribute to Sean Connery, who they wanted to play Sybok. They go and they meet this god character, and then it turns out that it's actually Satan. Heaven turns into hell, and there's like the River Styx and blah, blah, blah. Like what the idea Shatner said was that the existence of Satan must presume the idea of God. So I guess it's like From Dusk Till Dawn. And that it's something that exists in our hearts or some meaningless nonsense. But he said Roddenberry didn't like that. But he said that Roddenberry also had a similar episode he'd written called The God Thing that didn't get made, but that Roddenberry had his own kind of religious statement he wanted to make that he never got to make. And that was probably why he didn't love this idea.
Well, there is an episode of the animated series that's very similar. The Magics of Megas Toro, of Megas 2. The Magics of Megas 2. I'm not sure if that's how you pronounce it, but it's kind of similar. I mean, the details are different, but it's similar in the plot in which they end up in the center of the galaxy, much like in 5. And instead of meeting a god thing, they meet what could possibly be Satan.
Yeah, it's one of these ideas. Star Trek V, it has a premise that really feels like it could be an episode of the show, much like Star Trek IV, which was basically Nick Meyer's time after time plot.
Yeah,
with the whales instead of Jack the Ripper. Yeah. I mean, it's the same. If you watch Star Trek IV and Time After Time, same movie. When I saw Time After Time, when I saw Time After Time, I couldn't believe how similar it was to Star Trek IV.
But you don't get David Warner in a disco outfit.
No.
Yeah, pick it up when.
I like 4. Obviously, 4 is a better movie, but I'll watch 5 over 4 any day just because it's more exciting.
Yeah.
4 doesn't have any action scenes.
No, it has a lot of cool 80s stuff, you know.
Four needed Eddie Murphy. It was written for Eddie Murphy and needed him.
Who was he going to play
instead of the woman that's in the film, the female lead that Kirk flirts with?
I get that, but that's such a female role though. It's like a horse.
Yeah, apparently the original script was very different. It was Eddie Murphy was like a hep cat who like takes him around San Francisco or whatever.
Oh, okay.
Because Murphy was such a big Star Trek fan that he wanted to be in the Star Trek movie, and so they wrote it for him, and for whatever reason he couldn't do it, and then they rewrote it, you know, quickly as the film it is now.
We do have David Warner in Star Trek V as Sin Jin.
Yes,
like,
we do.
Like he's from the guy from Jane Eyre. I am Sin Jin Talbot. Sin Jin, what?
Are you guys down with the myth tampering? Are you guys down with the myth tampering of, it's Spock's brother or half-brother?
Shatner said that was changed. It was changed for him to be Spock's brother because Nimoy could not abide the idea of Spock betraying Kirk, especially after Kirk brought him back to life. He said that both Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly both had big objections to his original script where Spock decides that Zar, later Sybok, is the Messiah, and then therefore can't allow harm to come to him, so he betrays Kirk. And then through the finding of pain, like, you know, he shows McCoy his pain of euthanizing his dad. Because he shows him that, McCoy follows him as well. He said that both Leonard Nimoy and DeForest Kelly were both very unhappy with that. And so that character was changed to Spock's brother in order to make that betrayal more believable. So that's why it happened. Because, yeah, it is. That is a pretty big revelation. And even Shatner in his book said he felt like it was kind of lightweight. It felt like something from a soap opera or something. Like it didn't really hold the weight that it should have held.
I would have accepted a friend from the seminary or something much better. I don't know.
Yes, I mean, it being his brother, it's like, really? Like, Spock's had a brother this whole time, and he's this weird messiah figure, and we haven't heard about him? You know, just, it feels a little convenient for the plot. It just doesn't, I don't think it really works.
Yeah, it's a cult leader. They're doing the cult leader thing, and it's too much of a small world inconvenience or convenience for, you know, this big continuity universe they've set up with this series. You know, this guy in this on this obscure planet or whatever, or the guy who attacks. Oh, it just happens to be Spock's half brother. I think they called him, right?
Yeah, you're a Vulcan.
Yeah, it's a little too Blofeld being Bond's old adopted roommate or adopted brother.
Yeah.
Yes, from Spectre.
It's a little too.
Had no weight whatsoever in that film. None.
Right, right. It just didn't mean anything.
None.
It was so stupid.
And I don't think it has weight in this movie either. Even when I was a kid, I went, wait, Spock has a brother? Oh, he has a brother. Now his brother's dead. Okay. All right.
It means nothing.
So they go to this planet, Shakari, in the middle of the universe. They meet this god figure. And I think one problem he said Gene Roddenberry had with the script was that the god was like the Yahweh god. And mm-hmm. Roddenberry was like, well, what about all these Eastern religions? What about other aliens? Like, what about their conception? You know, he just sort of was sort of like, is the universe Christian? Which, me being Catholic, would say yes.
Right.
But he had that problem, which is probably why we get the I am known by many faces. And we see like Buddha and
right,
all that stuff. But but I thought that was kind of an interesting point. But, you know, we were supposed to have all these demons, and then they were like, that's too expensive. And then Shatner said, I want Rockman. Maybe the god animates Rockman. I want Rockman. And he wanted like Rockman, 6 Rockman. But apparently they were so expensive that like they were going to give him 3 and then 1. And then he was just like, okay, I get no Rockman.
I still love how they cut the budgets on these things, even though they make millions for them. And it's and yet they nickel and dime them on effects like Rockman.
Yeah. Very strange.
I think the fourth one made the most money of all. The fourth one made the most money of all, didn't it?
Yeah, it did.
It's and this one hit. This one did pretty well. Its budget was 33 and it made 63.
Yeah.
Pretty good return well, there.
Yeah, but Paramount gave him hardly anything to work with, to the point where, according to Star Trek Movie Memories, he wanted to shoot non-union, and he didn't want the union guys getting word of it, so they took the crew and they snuck out of L.A. in the dead of night to go shoot somewhere near Las Vegas, and somebody tipped the unions off because they had a Mad Max type scenario on the desert expanse, and there was union guys throwing Molotov cocktails at the trucks.
Oh my gosh! They don't play around.
No,
I wonder if that's what got the early word out that the movie was, because early word on it was bad, like in Cine Fantastique and the newsstand magazines at the time. Like there was already like bad word of mouth on it, and I wonder if that was planted by the unions just to throw off Shatner.
Probably.
You know, in this movie, the producer Harvey Bennett said, "I want to reflect on for the record." That no matter what the picture was or wasn't, no one has ever accounted for two things. One, the summer of discontent. And by that, I mean, from a standpoint of blockbuster movies, 1989 was the summer in which more blockbuster movies were squeezed into theaters than ever before. Batman, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Lethal Weapon 2, Rain Man, Back to the Future Part 2, Look Who's Talking, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. All these things came out one week after another, piled on top of each other, and there is very little way we could have done any better at the box office. In fact, in the face of all that competition, we shouldn't have done as well as we did. We should have been lost in the shuffle. We did very well.
It did better than License to Kill, which I think only made like $43 million
in the U.S. James Bond kind of died for a while after that.
Got a drubbing that summer.
6 years it took to get some shitty one. Well, Hunter likes Golden.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
that's thought you liked the video game.
And the video game's awesome. Yeah.
Video game is the legacy of that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
Changed gaming forever.
Something else came out that summer, another franchise movie, Ghostbusters 2, and that's significant because ILM ended up doing their movie as well as Last Crusade when they should have done Star Trek 5.
Yes.
And I guess Connery was too busy filming the Indiana Jones sequel as well.
He didn't do this film because he was doing Last Crusade.
And they would have put more money in it had he done this film, I think.
Yeah.
Last Crusade is actually, it's an entertaining movie, but it's very much, in my opinion, the least of the three by far.
I hate it.
It's a remake.
Bores the hell out of me.
It's a remake of
Raiders. And the locations are all like honeymoon locales like Venice and things like that. And out of Ghostbusters 2, Last Crusade and Star Trek 5, I would probably watch Star Trek 5 more times for the rest of my life than I would the other two.
I was actually surprised. I think this was my third time watching this movie. I saw it when I was a kid. I saw it when I was older. And then I watched it this time. And I was surprised. It's one of those ones I'm always surprised at how much I enjoy it, considering what a bad reputation it has. I'm always going, you know what? Is it as good as 6 or 2? No, it feels like a solid episode of the show. It moves at a decent clip. You get a lot of good classic stuff with Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. It has some goofy, kind of silly humor with Mr. Scott and Uhura, the weird naked dance she does. It's a little odd.
Relationship comes out of nowhere.
Yeah, but it has a little bit for what's his name for Chekhov to do, which I like. I'm a big Chekhov fan. The sun has come out. It's a miracle.
Well, it has a lot for all those supporting actors to do, which is funny because they're always bad-mouthing Shatner, like he hogs up the movies and he hogged up the TV show and gave them nothing. And then the one he directs, he gives them probably more scenes than they had in any of the other films.
Yeah, in fact, you know, like Sulu... Sulu had nothing in Star Trek IV. His entire subplot was cut out.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, they cut out a lot of stuff for him in Star Trek IV that they'd shot. You see the entire cast get a lot to do in this one. Like, Uhura has a lot to do. Sulu and Chekhov. But, you know, Scott is kind of... He's just kind of bonking his head and knocking into stuff.
They do spend a good part of the time being mindless slaves to Cybok, though, which seems kind of insulting. But
yes, and I think that Shatner said that most of the cast had a problem with that they all turn on, that they all go along with him so quickly.
Yeah, they didn't. But Takai was to give a little speech.
Takai was complimentary to Shatner, probably for the first time ever.
Well, you know, Bill,
not his direction.
He did a very fine job directing. Bill did. You know, I said, Bill, can I have a scene where I take my shirt off and fight with a fencing rod? And Bill respectfully declined. But he did entertain my suggestion.
The Magics of Megas 2, the one that I told you about that this seems to be stealing liberally from. There's a moment, they land on this planet where magic is a thing, and through the will of the brain, you can manifest anything you want. And the first thing, of all the people, the first thing that Sulu manifests is a beautiful woman so he can make out with her.
Like, what?
I was trying to say when Gene passed away. 1991, so he was around for a couple of years after Next Generation premiered.
Yeah, you know, he was like, I want Troy to wear a low-cut shirt. I love the first season of Next Generation because you can tell Gene was involved because there's women fighting in gladiator arenas, you know.
Yeah.
I also love the planet where, like, everybody is beautiful and they all, like, have free love and have sex with each other, but then Wesley falls in the flowers and so they have to execute him.
What?
Yeah, you've never seen that one.
Most of them I've never seen. I saw like maybe the first two or three episodes and I don't remember them.
There's this one where they go to this planet and like everybody's like turbo, everybody, all the dudes are Giga Chad and all the women are like Victoria's, like not Victoria's Secret models, but like 80s like super hot models, and they're all like, it's all free love and blah, blah, blah. And like the entire crew of the Enterprise is super horny and wants to go down there. And, and Wesley is playing with the kids and he throws a football and he runs and like falls in the flowers. And because they have like zero tolerance for any, infraction, like if you do anything, like the punishment is death. And so they're like, well, we have to kill him. And so Picard's like, do I break the prime directive? You know, why do I make him sound like Sean Connery? I don't know.
Well, nobody can really do a Patrick Stewart voice.
Number one, engage.
That's all everybody does is the numbers.
I guess punishment is suitable because it was murder, but that is a little bit like a Wolf in the Fold.
You know,
Jack the Ripper one.
Yeah,
where it's like a lusty planet.
Yeah, this one it was lusty planet, and everybody's super excited, but then it's like, they're also like have zero tolerance for crimes, but it's one of those ones where they have to figure out how to save their crewmen without breaking the prime directive. But the show would have been better if they just let him kill Wesley because he's a terrible character. and it gave Will Wheaton a platform to be an annoying blowhard on the internet for decades.
Isn't there a rumor that what's left of the original crew is going to show up on yet another failed Star Trek venture?
Well, they did the Star Trek Picard thing, but to me that's just apocryphal because even the premise is just so silly. The Federation is bad and Picard must stop it. It kind of goes against the whole utopian thing that they had going on.
Right. But you know, they got to smash the patriarchy, so.
Well, it's all like, you know, Trump bad, therefore we the resistance now, you know.
So what are they going to do now that we're in this kind of occupied, anything like society's kind of stood still. How is their show going to rebel against anything now?
I don't know. Like, what do you do for season two? Are we still in?
Right.
Are we still in? Does the Federation now have Mr. Magoo running it?
And right.
We're okay now because
are they against the neoliberal order of things that's going on now? Yeah. Or?
Well, hopefully there is no season two. Much like Twilight Zone, season three is not happening. So.
Yeah,
right.
Thank goodness.
Probably won't. I don't see how they can even pay for this stuff. I honestly don't know how streaming makes enough money to keep these things going.
Well, my hope is that now, since movie theaters are no longer going to be a thing, more than likely. I mean, movie theaters are going to be treated probably like bowling alleys or something. Like, yeah, they're around, but it's not something that they're on every block. They won't be able to recoup the money at all these 200 million plus, epic extravaganzas. So they're just going to have to go back to middle class filmmaking again. It's going to have to be 30 to 50 million. At least that's my hope. So no more cape shit, at least not at the level that it
is. Well, I think you're going to see like middle budget cape shit, like Mandalorian, stuff like that.
You'll see a Daredevil movie or a Punisher movie.
Punisher, Iron. I think you're going to see it kind of go TV middle budget route.
I don't mind a Punisher movie. I mean, whatever. At least it won't be so wasteful, I guess, even if it is still cape shit at 50 million.
Well, usually the 50 million cape shit's better than the 200 million cape shit. You know?
Well, they're totally missing out not doing like a Power Man and Iron Fist mid-budget movie, like a blaxploitation kung fu thing. In the 70s.
They could do that with Blade. They could set Blade in the 70s.
The only man who should be given $200 million for cape shit is Zack Snyder. There we go.
So you can piss everybody off for years and years.
I'll see if I'll sit through 4 hours. I don't know.
Or the black and white cut.
Yes. Need the black and white cut.
Well, I mean, we shall see where Marvel will be at, I guess, in a few months when they start dumping all their crap onto some streaming. Well, I guess Disney Plus it'll be.
Yeah, Black Widow is going to get dumped, and I could see that bombing easily.
Does anybody want a Black Widow movie? She is the most boring, stupid character in that entire universe.
Like, played by a pretty boring actress, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Scarlett Johansson, I mean, she's just doing the same thing she does in everything, where she has this blank look on her face and just does some kicks and shoots some people.
And her stunt double comes in and does that Rey Mysterio move where she grabs him with two legs and flips him over.
Exactly. I hear people going, oh, I can't wait for the Black Widow movie. And I'm like, really? Why don't you just go watch Ghost in the Shell? It's the same thing.
We already had it. It was called Salt with Angelina Jolie. That's your Black Widow movie. That's actually closer to the Black Widow comic than what they're doing in the Marvel movies.
My concern is that it's been, almost 2 years since one of those things has dropped on us, and I just feel like people are going to want to watch them just out of, kind of being starved to death for 2 years.
I hear people kind of going, oh, there's nothing to watch, There's nothing new. I'm watching the same stuff over and over again, which I'm like, we have like 100 years of content that you haven't consumed. Come on.
They don't care. They don't. Yeah. Now you could shut down production of all movies now and you have 110 years of shit that you can sit there and watch.
I haven't noticed, cause I just watch old stuff. I mean, there's tons of movies I haven't seen that I'm watching. So, I don't even feel it.
There's a movie that is better than, as far as I'm concerned, than any cape shit. And I think it is basically cape shit. I think it's based on radio plays, but, I'm blanking on it now, but John introduced me to it about half a year ago and I was blown away by how good it was and how it was paced like a new movie. Not Mandrake the Magician, but what's the yogi, John?
Chandu.
Yes, Chandu. And what's the title? Is it just Chandu?
I think it's on a Blu-ray that was released, really well restored too. Chandu the Magician. Yeah,
it's Chandu the Magician. Okay.
Yeah,
watch that. It's an hour and like 2 minutes long. It is paced very in a modern way. It's really good stuff. And it's a special effects movie.
Yeah. It was co-directed by William Cameron Menzies, who was the top visual guy in the 1930s.
Yeah, if you haven't seen that, Hunter, I can't recommend that enough.
It was a big inspiration. The character was a huge inspiration on Doctor Strange when Stan Lee and Steve Ditko were doing that comic book. Lee admitted to lifting stuff from Shaun Do the Magician.
I'm all about it.
Yeah, it's really good. far superior. I guarantee what we've been getting.
It's free on YouTube. Let me see. Yep, free on YouTube. It's the it's a high res version too. So,
yeah, excellent movie.
An hour Sweet. And 11.
I'm definitely
Shandu the Magician, 1932. Do that, and as a double feature, I don't know. Let's say Charlie Chan and the Treasure Island.
What about
yes?
What about Star Trek V? You can go down to Paradise City. You can run around. You can yeah. you can get you can kill a cast member of Cats by chucking her in a fish tank. That was my favorite part. Is William Shatner murdering a member of the Cats cast? Felt like he was reviewing Cats by Andrew Lloyd Webber. I feel like that was Shatner going, I saw Cats. I didn't care for it, so I chucked Mr. Mephistopheles into the tank. And the girl who played the Romulan console, one of the worst actresses ever in a Star Trek anything, I think.
Who was that? Who was she?
Oh, I forget her name.
The Asian girl?
Yeah. In the commentary, Shatner's daughter brings up who she was, and she's like, that's so-and-so. Her name is so-and-so. And he goes, oh, really? he just totally forgot about her. He's like, oh.
In other words, you did get some interesting stuff out of that.
Yeah, he's just like, oh, okay, yeah, there you go. That's her name. Cynthia Gao?
Cynthia Gao, and she is in a movie that you guys should do, Kinjite, Forbidden Secrets, or Forbidden Subjects.
With Charles Bronson?
She's in that?
Yeah.
That's where Bronson laughs as he walks away as the villain is getting raped in prison.
And there's also this girl on the Enterprise who's always awkwardly featured with big hair, and that's Shatner's daughter, Melanie.
Oh, jeez. Who he didn't murder.
He did not murder his daughter, no.
He spared her.
Listen.
But he didn't murder his wife either, John. Come
on. Yeah, that's true.
He wrote a song with Brad Paisley about it. Would you do that if you murdered your wife? I think not.
No, not at all.
You wouldn't write a song with Brad Paisley about it.
My wife was murdered by a rockman.
Would you do a song with Henry Rollins about it?
No, not at all.
No.
I can't get behind that.
My wife, she was swimming in the pool. She was tied to a rock man. Fell to the ground.
I can't get behind that. Weighted
down by the rock man.
I can't get behind that. I love...
Have you heard this Shatner track from one of his albums where he's like kind of criticizing his criticizors?
Yes.
And it's called Has Been.
Yes.
It's really good.
Yeah. He talks about how like they sit on the couch and Nintendo is their game.
Yeah.
Nintendo is their game. Has been. Yeah. Like really goes after his audience there.
What'd you say to me? You call me Has Been?
Has Been? Yeah, that whole like, album he did with Ben Folds is pretty amazing. Adrian Belew from King Crimson's on one of the songs.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
And you, young man, what's your name? Jack. Never Done Jack.
Yeah! Yes! Never Done Jack. Oh, man. Oh. That was one of the first examples of a guy dealing in public with his internet critics.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Way ahead of Kevin Smith.
Oh, yeah, big time. Oh, I was just going to say, I got to say, his cover of Common People is better than the original. The original sucks. He did a bet. His cover.
I'd agree with that. I don't care much for Pulp or Jarvis Cocker.
No, his cover of it's good. You want to live like common people? You want to do what common people do? You want to sleep with common people?
That's why he got rid of his wife. She was a commoner.
I didn't want to sleep with common people, so I drown common people.
Alleged
common people.
So did you like Star Trek V?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, you know, it's it has an un. I think its reputation is unfair. And it didn't do badly at the box office. Clearly, it was good enough to get Star Trek VI, which is the best of the, I think, all of them, in my opinion. Star Trek VI is the one I watched the most when I was a kid.
Even better than Khan?
Yeah, I think I watched Star Trek VI more than any Star Wars movie, and I just loved it. Khan was great, but I loved Star Trek VI. It was just Star Trek VI was like epic with the Klingon ship and the mystery and the gulag with David Bowie's wife turning into Kirk and stuff. It's just crazy, you know.
Yeah. It's definitely one of the more entertaining. I saw it on video. I rented the VHS tape, I think, at the time. So
yeah,
I've never
same.
Seen,
you know, I, it was
never
I
seen it widescreen or anything, and I thought it was fun because I didn't consistently see them in the theater. I wasn't a big enough fan of this stuff to bother with seeing them in the at the movies. I think the only one I saw at the movies was like Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4, and that was it. And I saw First Contact because I needed something to do that weekend because I was living in Florida. Without my video collections, so I was like, "Well, I guess I'll go see this First Contact movie." And
I saw
it was okay. I didn't really get into it though.
I saw First Contact on a date when I was in sixth grade.
Look at you,
yeah,
Mr. Arrow Shelf, Mr. Grade School Dayton Stud.
That was a sixth grade date right there, going to see First
sixth
Contact.
Grade Stud there.
Yeah,
introduce
you hold her hand.
Yeah, you know,
Stud.
Yeah, just. Cool kid right here.
Yeah.
Let me get a kiss on the cheek later.
I don't think so.
Darn. Struck down.
Maybe next time.
She was too busy digging on Chekhov.
Yeah, I know. She just thought that that Data was just so attractive. You know, I just couldn't compare.
Is that the one with the Borg?
Yes.
Okay. Is that considered to be the best of the four?
That is the best of the Next Generation ones, and Next Generation fans love that one. I don't even think it's as good as any of the first six.
I would not call it as good as any of the first six.
Yeah,
everyone
everyone says it's the only good Next Generation movie, but you know, every time I've gone back to watch it, I've just gone, you know, it's. I'd rather watch Star Trek V. I'd rather watch 3 motion, but any of those.
I think the characters
people
in the
make
original
references
show
to the Borg all the time.
Yeah,
they do. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's a side effect of I think Generations being more popular than the original show.
Yeah,
that's my guess. I just like the original characters better than the Generations people. It doesn't compare to me.
I like the Next Gen a lot, but I agree with you. I think the original cast, you just can't beat it. You can't beat the actors have this chemistry. There's more fun in it because, you know, the Next Generation, as much as I like it, it can be kind of, it doesn't have the spark and the fight that original cast has, you know?
No.
I don't think they have a Chad like Kirk either.
No, you know, no. Kirk is just, you know, as silly as it is for the captain to be plunging headlong into danger like that, you know, that's just part of who Kirk is. You know, he's got to go punch the lizard guy in the face.
Yeah, he's Horatio Hornblower, you know, with a phaser gun instead of a sword.
Now in the original show, it's very much the Kirk and Spock show. With occasional, you know, Three Musketeers sort of deal with McCoy. And the rest of the cast is sort of sidelined. Is it the same way in Generations?
Next Gen has...
Or is everybody equal?
Next Gen seems to really... As far as I haven't seen as much of Next Generation, but I like everything I've seen in it. It seems to really kind of give all the characters their time in the sun.
Okay.
Correct me if I'm wrong, John, but that's my memory of it. You know, I never thought like, you know, this character doesn't really get enough to do. In fact, some of them I think have too much to do, like Wesley.
Yeah. Well, I remember it being the Wesley Saves the Day show, the first couple episodes I tried or the first few I watched. Yeah, and I don't know if those are the first few that aired. I just know that the ones I watched, it was like WizKid Saves the Day crap. And kind of like the Dumb Dads commercials of the 21st century, you know, where stupid dad can't figure anything out, and his kid like presses a button. Here you go, dad. You just flip the switch. You know, that type of shit. Yeah. Nick DiPaolo bitches about it all the time on his show, but I couldn't get into it. But from what I could tell, it seemed to be like they were trying to make sure nobody was too big a star than anybody else. Like they didn't want another Shatner situation where his egomania. Or what they called egomania, was guiding the show. Because the 60s show depended on Shatner. He was the star.
Mm-hmm.
which is something you have to remind people when they listen to Nichelle Nichols say complain about something or George Takei or whatever. It's like that show lived and died on Shatner. Like before Shatner accepted it, I think it was offered to like Jack Lord. It was offered to James Coburn. It was offered to all these different actors. And then they went down the list and Shatner agreed to it.
Did Spock become the breakout character while the show was running, or did he become the breakout character in the 70s revival?
I think it had to be while it was running, because I remember my grandmother had this old Hollywood magazine that had movie and TV stars interviewed and everything, and they interviewed Nimoy, and it had to be when the show was airing. And he was talking about how obviously he was getting female fan and stuff, and you know, was talking about how Spock is liked by women. And also, I think he put out his Ballad of Bilbo Baggins and all that stuff in the 60s, if I'm not wrong.
I loved it on the commentary. Shatner goes, oh, and, you know, Leonard can't sing, you know, when they were talking about Row, Row, Row Your Boat. And I was like, yeah, well, his album proved that.
Yeah, exactly. But and I think that came out in the 60s, but the show just got bigger in the 70s. Like the syndication audience, like the ratings, way more viewers than they had on network TV, where it was, I don't even think it was ever in the top 20.
Like, you know, when it aired on NBC. Is it the original show that didn't do well but had a cult following, and the cult following ended up reviving it eventually? Because, I mean, did we have any other examples of that before then? Because, you know, now it's kind of typical for a show to get, have a short run, get canceled, and then it has this vocal fandom that eventually resurrects it.
I think, unless there's something I'm not thinking of, because Twilight Zone, I believe, was a big mainstream hit when it aired in the 50s. Mm-hmm. And Outer Limits has never really had a big revival. Lost in Space actually had better ratings than Star Trek back in the 60s.
Oh, yeah, I believe that, yeah.
Yeah, and but I think in the 70s, Star Trek would be the first show that got this massive revival just because of the fans. And plus, more young people were being introduced to the show in the 70s, like me. And, you know, we weren't around in the 60s to see it. So we got into it in the 70s. And I think into the 70s, something like that wouldn't have been seen as so weird, because you had all these science fiction movies on TV all the time. Mm-hmm. And you had a lot of weird movies that had come out. And so they were more accepting of that. Comic books could be a bit weird. And they were more accepting of the imagery they were putting on there. So that was more mainstream. And you know, this is all before Star Wars. Like, it was huge. And what's funny is I don't think the audience perceived Star Wars and Star Trek to be even similar at all. It was like two completely separate things.
Well, and that's why when people compare the two, you know, and I was comparing them earlier, but just because it was the two prevalent space things.
Yeah.
You know, I remember when I was a kid watching them, they were just so different. You know, Star Trek was more cerebral, and, you know, Star Wars was more like, you know, it's like Indiana Jones. It's an adventure, you know.
Swashbuckling, yeah.
Right. One is like Isaac Asimov. The other is more like Edgar Rice Burroughs or something. You know, it's more pulpy action or whatever. Or that was a perception of Star Wars at the time, not how it is now, where it actually thinks it's something intelligent and it's not. It's funny how they're compared now. But when I was in college, like, when I encountered Trekkies for the first time in my life, I didn't think they were real. I thought it was just something made up in TV Guide. I encountered them on college campuses, and yeah, they seemed to be obsessed with both Star Wars and Star Trek. It was like Star Wars was their action thing, Star Trek was their drama, you know.
Did you go up to people who are Star Trek fans and say, I don't believe in you?
I should have. I think I was a little stunned by them. I was just like, come on, don't you watch other stuff? Don't you read other science fiction besides Star Trek? Because the thing is, they weren't even reading like classic science fiction or even current science fiction at the time. They weren't reading like Greg Bear or anything. They were reading like Star Trek novels, Star Wars novels. You know, it was a continuity of what they were watching in TV and movies.
They're not as good as me, who grew up reading Babylon 5 novels.
Yes, I was reading Robotech novelizations. Yeah.
I was reading Tech War novels.
You made a good point just now, and it just occurred to me that Star Wars now considers itself something important as opposed to just being this swashbuckling Flash Gordon type of thing. And Star Trek has betrayed its own roots as well. Now it's a swashbuckling important thing from what I'm seeing in these trailers. It's an action fest.
Right.
And neither of those two franchises really matter anymore.
No, they don't, because they disappointed their hardcore fans, and they betrayed the hardcore fans, and they don't offer anything unique to new fans or young people or anybody else. So they're kind of they both experience inertia because they weren't true to their original conceptions.
Well, and let me tell you, a Star Trek series that is widely considered to be bad is Enterprise. But when I go back and watch Enterprise, I enjoy it because it's so much better than the crap they're offering today.
Yeah. I mean,
does it have problems? Yes, but it still feels closer to the classic Star Trek than, you know, whatever J.J. Abrams turned it into, or, you know, whatever Star Trek Discovery is, you know.
Well, Abrams admitted he was not a fan. He was not a fan, and he was hired to basically make Star Trek for people who don't like Star Trek.
Yeah, and he thought he'd
bump up the action.
He made it like Star Wars. He said he was a Star Wars fan, and so he made it like Star Wars. There you go.
I like the first one well enough, I guess. Or I did back in 09 when I saw it. I can't.
John Eric's not allowed on the show anymore. Okay.
I like the first one. Now, I will admit, I like the first one in the theater. I enjoyed it. No. However, when I watched it on video, I hated it.
I had the same experience, actually.
I haven't seen it since the theater.
All kidding aside, when I saw it in the theater, I was like, hey, this is great. You know, they did a great job reviving it. And then when I got it on video, the luster was gone. I was going, what the hell is going on with Spock? Why is he in love? What is going on? And the camera can't sit still. And what's, you know, why is Kirk, like, jumping off of motorcycles and all this?
Is he hanging off a cliff like 3 times in the film?
And then I went, oh, and the movie's another Wrath of Khan remake, which the next movie was a literal Wrath of Khan. But it was another thing where you have a villain who's got an axe to grind with a member of the Enterprise. In fact, Shatner said for Star Trek V, one thing they became aware of was that it felt like another Wrath of Khan movie with how they had written Cybok's character, and that he seemed like another Khan, in that he was this holy zealot, and so they rewrote him to make him more sympathetic, to make it less like we're just doing Wrath of Khan again. But, you know, Star Trek Nemesis, the J.J. Abrams Star Trek movies, they all are the same plot, where it's there's a villain who has a past with a member of the Enterprise and comes back for revenge, you know.
Of course, Into Garbage is literally a Khan remake.
Yeah, yeah.
And is the one I haven't seen Beyond. I haven't seen Into Garbage. The third one, Beyond, is that yet again another Khan remake? I don't know what they did.
You know,
with
honestly, I saw it in the theater. I remember nothing about it. I just remember being bored.
They're on a planet and they get separated, and I think they have to have a fight with somebody, and it's somebody who's got a vendetta against the Enterprise, I'm guessing. I can't remember a damn thing about it, really.
I saw it in the theater. I remember nothing about it.
I just remember what my son said to me when we took a bathroom break. He said, Dad, why is this more like a Star Wars movie instead of Star Trek?
Your son is wise.
And he was only 5 or 6 at the time, and not only that, he'd only seen a few Star Trek episodes on Netflix. He had never watched the movies or anything. We just went to see it because it was at the discount theater at the old Elvis Cinema. And, you know, it's just like, even he picked up on that.
And John, like, said, son, I've instructed you well on what.
Yes, you've been raised properly.
I heard from some longtime fans that was the best of the three, but I don't know.
It could be in that it was off formula. And it was all designed to be a popcorn movie.
Well,
and
I got to tell you, when I saw Into Darkness, I hated it when I saw it in the theater.
I despised it as well.
Star Trek Beyond, I was just indifferent to. I just went, okay, I just saw something.
Well, the funny thing is, Into Darkness is a movie my wife denies having watched with me. And we watched it.
You're like, I was there.
Netflix. No, it was on. I think it was on Netflix, and we were watching it. And she denies seeing it. She goes, "I never watched that one. What are you talking about?" And I think it's just like 3 years later. No, I never watched it. What are you talking? What, he played Khan, huh?
Yeah, you know? It's so forgettable. Like, it's just.
It's terrible. It's a bad, bad movie. I was stunned when I watched it. How bad it was.
Yeah, Abrams is a good con man. You know, he knows how to hook. He knows how to throw something out there like that first movie that kind of tricks you a little bit, and then you kind of wait a bit and you go, "Oh wait, this is actually a piece of crap." You know.
Yes, isn't he taking over the DC movies? Is that the latest news?
Really?
Oh, yeah, sad. I think they they've got him working on a new Superman, which Zolli says it's just a trick. It's just like corporate babble.
Could be. Zolli usually.
You know what
is,
I knew babble. You know what I think was corporate babble from its inception was Quentin Tarantino's Star Trek. As soon that was announced, as soon as that was announced, I was like, nope, that's never gonna happen. And here we are.
R-rated Star Trek, man. You know.
Yeah. Every time, like, you would see those stories, I would go, I just don't see this happening. It just...
It was almost like bait to get Chris Pine back at a reduced rate, probably. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, that was the big holdup, is he wanted more money to play Kirk again, and, you know, there was sort of a war of contracts or whatever. So they'll we're getting Tarantino. Don't you want to work with him?
Yeah.
Yeah, never put that past them, you know. But the interesting thing about Star Trek V, and of course it's Shatner's, one of his best speeches and one of his quickest, was the "I need my pain" speech.
I need
because
my pain.
To me,
oh my god, talked about that.
Yeah,
that's
really
great.
Good.
That's one of the, that's probably the best monologue in the entire series.
Yeah, and it's so short and brief, but to the point. And it is almost like a advanced warning to the eventual Prozac generation.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that people don't need Prozac. I know there's some people who do. But I think it got overprescribed and a lot of people were taking it who needed to, you know, maybe lay off that stuff.
Yeah, it's one of those things where people seem to think that trauma has held them back, victimhood has held them back, when really unpleasant and bad experiences sort of form who we are.
Yeah.
And they, you know, a lot of people think, oh, if I had never made this mistake. Well, if you had never made that mistake, you probably would just make it again at some point, right?
Yeah.
And so
you didn't learn.
Yeah, you just, we have, you know, I probably never would have found out the stove was hot if I had never touched it, you know?
Right.
But people have these experiences that define them, but, you know, saying I need my pain. Yeah. I mean, of course it's, you know, I'm not saying everybody, people can't do with help, but yeah, that's a great point. That moment, it is a great moment for Kirk. And as much as people like to make fun of Shatner, we love this character for a reason, and it's because of moments like that. It is a great moment. And in fact, like, you know, like the stuff with, like, you know, McCoy euthanizing his dad and him saying, like, you know, they found a cure a week later and, you know, and stuff like that. And then Spock's dad rejecting him and stuff like that. Yeah, it's good stuff, you know.
Yeah, it is.
You know, those scenes are, you know, you learn things about those characters in that scene.
And it's very quick, and it tells you all you need to know, really. Gives you a lot of character development in about 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that, and think about movies today that take 2 hours to explain shit.
Character development for three individual characters, not just one, in 3 minutes. No, it's a great scene.
Yeah, it's a real gem. It's anybody dismissing this movie just based on reputation. It's like, no, you got to see it just for that 3 minutes.
Yeah, there's this kind of groupthink in geekdom where they, you know, there's this prominent YouTube video that demolishes this movie, therefore I can't like it. I think a lot of these films, people overlook these great moments and these great things about them because they feel they're not supposed to like it for whatever reason. Because Red Letter Media says you can't like it or something.
Yeah, right. I was gonna say I knew exactly the videos you're talking about. I can enjoy those. I can watch and enjoy those just fine and not agree with them. I remember when their Phantom Menace came, you know, I didn't really agree with it all that much. There were certain holes in their logic.
Well,
that
and,
I could.
You know, they'll say there was something. They were giving the movie Blade crap for having these lighter moments, and I'm like, that's the best. Those are the best parts, you know, like the cops shooting Blade and him going like, "What are you guys crazy?" You know? And then when my favorite part is when he's like, you know, some people trying to I skate uphill before he kills Deacon Frost. You know? Like just these little moments. But people act like a movie like this content has to be super serious all the time. You can't have these lighter. It can't have like a tone that kind of departs a little bit.
No, then you can't. Then you have the Nolan Batman movies, which you cannot watch three years later.
Boy, oh boy! You know, I went. Hey, you know, we watched the Michael. I think I told this on the show recently, but my wife and I watched the Michael Keaton Batman movies, and I went, hey, let's watch Batman Begins. And my wife was like, couldn't even finish it. She was like, this is so boring, you know. And I went, you're right. Oh my gosh, I can't believe how bad this is.
I fell asleep in the theater in 2005.
At the time, after Batman and Robin, it was an overcorrection, you know. But at the time, for me, you know, it seemed like the right direction. But now when I watch it, I'm bored out of my skull.
You know what it needed more of? It needed more of those moments like when the Scarecrow lights him on fire and says, you need to lighten up.
It needed more Scarecrow, period, I think. Yeah. I think there needed to be more.
Scarecrow should have been the villain.
More Scarecrow, less Ra's al Ghul, you know.
Right.
Yeah, I was down when I heard Scarecrow was the villain. I'm like, all right. And then no Scarecrow. Then what happens to him? He gets zapped in the face by a taser by Katie Holmes. That's how he gets, you know, that's his demise. Just like,
I remember I had a big set
up with two or three strong scenes like, oh, he's going to be the villain. And then nothing.
Yeah, no, the stuff with Scarecrow is the best stuff in the film. In fact, the greatest, Eric, I know John doesn't play games, but Eric, did you ever play the Batman Arkham Asylum game?
I knew you were gonna. I've seen clips of the Scarecrow boss. It looks good. It looks like a cool little boss moment.
The Scarecrow boss in Arkham Asylum is the best Batman thing ever. It looks really.
The stuff
with Scarecrow in Arkham Asylum, not Arkham Knight, because the Scarecrow in Arkham Knight is just he's like I don't know what he is. He's something completely different. But in Arkham Asylum. You know, you'll be playing the game, you'll be running around in Arkham Asylum, and then stuff gets weird, and you go, oh, Scarecrow's nearby. And the game just gets so surreal and weird. But yeah, the stuff, there are several boss battles with Scarecrow, and it is one of my favorite Batman things ever. Like, that game is just...
It looks really appropriate for that character, for you to fight him in such a manner.
Any movie should take notes.
I think they need to revisit that character again in future Batmans because I don't think they did him justice in Batman Begins.
No. Do we want to sort of wrap up Star Trek V? I mean, I think John made some great points that are good to go out on about how strong.
Yeah, I'm glad John brought up that strong speech. I completely forgot.
I forgot about it too, but he's right. You know, it's terrific.
That's the best part of the film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Easily.
Yeah. It's worth watching just for that.
Well, Eric, what would you give Star Trek 5 out of 10?
I was going to give it a 6.5, but John reminded me of that great scene. I think I'm going to give it a 7.
Wow. Yeah. Very good. John, what about you?
I'm going to give it a 7.
I'm going to give it a 6. I think it's very good. I like it, maybe not as much as you guys, but I think as far as that series goes, you know, it gives you a lot of it does. I think, Eric, you made a great point when you said it is the first episode in a while I think it's the first movie really where we just get some pure Kirk, Spock, and McCoy interactions that like we would get in the show, because the other movies, because they're plots, we didn't really get that, or we got it for a little bit. We only got flashes of it.
You get a lot of it here.
You get a lot of it. And even in Star Trek VI, you know, they're separated for a lot of the film. You know,
I think I think 5 is actually better for the casual Star Trek viewer, which I consider myself. Like, I watch one episode every couple of months on Netflix. I'm not like a devoted fan. I haven't even seen every episode. I haven't even seen every movie, as far as I know. But I think this is actually better if you're just occasionally watch these.
Well, and like 2, 3, and 4 are basically a trilogy, right? You can't watch.
Yeah,
you can't watch them independent of each other. They just don't work on their own, except maybe Wrath of Khan. But 5 and 6 are two you can just watch independent of the others. You know, like,
yeah,
6 has some information you need to know, like the Klingons killed Kirk's son. It's really
right.
Like it just little, but it's something that you can just glean based on the performances and the dialogue.
Yeah, they're more episodic, and they deal with the higher concepts. I think 6 was sort of a a metaphor for what was going on with the fall of the communism.
Oh yeah,
and Soviet Union.
It's got gulag. It's got gulags. It's got
yeah,
you know, all kinds of stuff.
Well, that's what's kind of a weakness of the fifth one, because there's a lot of Klingon and Shatner interaction in it, and yet Shatner's hatred for the Klingons never comes up for the most part.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very big in six, but in five it's sort of not there.
So you missed Shatner on the commentary going, well, we just kind of forgot.
Well, we just forgot.
What do you think?
I felt like his pain was hidden here. You know, just he was more focused on finding God.
He's about to face God. Why does God need a spaceship?
What does God need with a spaceship?
My wife was murdered by a Klingon.
To get into the character, I thought, what if my wife was murdered by a Klingon instead of me?
Klingon just held her underwater and she drowned. It happened. Breathing in the chlorine.
All right. That's good. All right, guys, that's a good note to go out on. Where can we find you?
At Eric Zaldivar on YouTube. Nothing fancy, just my name. But I want to go out on, we're going to watch Baffled next week, right? The made-for-television Nimoy.
The thing that aired every other weekend when I was a kid.
Actually, we're watching Two Men and a Baby. That's what we're watching.
Gotta watch for that ghost kid that's in the background.
Ghost kid, the poster of, who is it? Tony Danza?
Poster of Ted Danson, I think, and it's tacked up, but it looks like a ghost kid in the background.
Would have been a better.
It looks like a kid with his mouth open.
It would have been better if the poster was Danzig.
Yeah. Yeah, he's saying "Mama," and there he is.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, everybody, I think that's about it. I'm gonna go ahead and say adios.
And I'll say, "Hey, live long and prosper."
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com. Type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.